This next episode of Sacks in the Basement was recorded before Garrett Crochet went out and gave up 7 runs over 3 official innings pitched. And while everything we talk about in this episode is still true in the long term, it's now starting to feel like they're personally messing with me. Does it feel that way to you too?
You're listening to Sacks in the Basement, a production of the Broadcast Basement Limited, where every show is 30 minutes of good and comes from a basement bar on the south side of Chicago. Pull up a stool, pour a cold one, and join us right now for Sacks in the Basement. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found, and always at sacksinthebasement.com.
Well, now that the rotation is set for the next, I think, 5, 6, 7 starts, it's very obvious that Chris Flexen is out of the rotation, my friend. I mean, there were hints of it. There were a couple beat reporters that said he's going to start getting some bullpen time, but now it looks pretty damn official. So he's moved on. Cannon and Nestrini are staying in the rotation. It goes after Crochet. Right now it goes Soroka, Nestrini, Cannon, Fetty. All that makes sense. And May 1st, when Clevinger gets here, I think that's it for Mike Soroka. On or about the 1st, according to Getz, that's when Clevinger is getting here. And I think that that's what's going to end up happening. You're going to have a rotation that's going to have a budding ace, a guy who is just showing you so much early in the season. He's one of the few positives in Garrett Crochet. Clevinger, who, you know, on paper with experience, is the second best guy in that rotation coming into the 2 spot. Nestrini in the 3 spot, who had a very nice debut. You want to see him build on it, but even if he or Cannon stumble in the next start or two, you want to give them several starts and give these guys a chance. They are your future. And Fetty has really pitched like a 5th starter and belongs sitting down there in the 5 spot. And Mike Soroka, a guy that I wanted, a guy that I was excited that they got, a guy who I said, wow, he was good in 2019. And I was like, if he could just recapture that. Here's a guy who was headed towards the top of the rotation for the Atlanta Braves just a few years ago until injury derailed him. But he's not the same pitcher. He's not getting results. He had to hit the ground running. You don't have him signed after this year. And I think he's going to be very soon not a part of the rotation for the White Sox. And I'm fine with it because at least that's the one thing I can look at that is being built, building quickly, and has some positive results. And that's the rotation.
Oh, yeah. And you even look at Fetty as you're talking about a guy who's pitched like a 5th starter. He hasn't had a lot of great games, but the numbers to this point after 4 starts, a 3.10 ERA, a 1.33 whip, 19 strikeouts to 9 walks. That's not bad. That's not bad at all. And as a mid-rotation, end-of-the-rotation guy, it's a nice little reclamation project from what he was when he was with the Nationals. Cannon and Nestrini, you're right. You got to give them a chance now that you've brought them up. You got to give them the opportunity. You know, Johnny Boom Boom comes out and goes 5 innings and gets 3 strikeouts and 1 walk. And Nick Nasty comes out, 5 strikeouts, 2 walks. That's what they're looking for, right? They're looking for, are you keeping guys off base? They didn't give up a whole lot as far as hits. They didn't give up runs. So you're going to give them a chance to build on that. And Mike Soroka, thus far, it's not like he's pitched into bad luck. He's got 12 walks over 10 strikeouts. He's got a 1.76 whip. That is a guy that is struggling to keep guys off base. He's not getting outs. He's walking too many dudes. He's going to be on the outs. And that would be true if he was in any rotation, let alone on the worst team in baseball right now, which he is. And, you know, there's other guys that are looking like they may not be long for this. I would expect Davey Garcia, who has not been terribly effective, to at some point maybe lose his spot. Maybe he's where Chris Flexen, if he stays in the bullpen, that's what he's going to take care of.
And, but I think I would keep Garcia just because I've seen a few flashes. He wasn't so bad in that one rare win that they got recently. What was it? They're in the doubleheader. When they got that second win, he looked halfway decent in his very, very small appearance that he made there.
And if he's somebody that they want to stretch out, and if he's got options, which I believe he does, then, you know, maybe they send him down to get him, you know, get him into Charlotte's rotation and do something there. Or, you know, it comes back to, does Pedro understand how to use these guys? And what do they think Davey Garcia is? Is he a middle relief guy that you're going to try and stretch over a couple of innings? Or are they going to try and maximize him the way that Michael Kopech got maximized and let him, you know, use his stuff at its hardest? You know, when Garcia, I think, has looked good is when he's only had one inning, and see if he can, you know, join Jordan Leisure and Michael Kopech as positives in the bullpen too. And I can't believe I'm saying that about Michael Kopech, but I am. And this is all good news. The bad news is that they still can't score or hit or do anything at the plate.
This episode of Sacks in the Basement and every episode brought to you by Cork and Carry at the park at the corner of 33rd and Princeton in the shadow of the ballpark. The place to kick things off if you're heading down to the ballpark. Bring the entire family over there. Great food at a great price and a great atmosphere. If I'm buying food going to a ball game, I'm supporting those guys. Cork and Carry at the park is a tradition like no other. Pre-game, post-game, in-game, your spot for White Sox viewing and hanging out with White Sox fans. Win or lose, make your plans to get to 33rd in Princeton. See more at corkandcarry.com. I look at this rotation right now and how it's setting up. And assuming that Soroka doesn't all of a sudden find a rabbit in a hat and start pitching really well, and they basically say, well, Mike Clevinger is not exactly ready yet. We're going to get him here as soon as we can, but we're going to give Soroka another start. We're going to start trying to figure out, like, did he finally put it together at the last minute? Likely that doesn't happen, right? So let's just assume he goes. And I know it's a small sample size because it's only two starts between Cannon and Nastrini, one apiece at this point, okay? But these are guys that realistically have a shot at a major league rotation. It could be very effective, and we've talked with the guys over at Future Sox about this in recent months. A guy like Crochet right now, four starts, he's got the whip of a closer. Walks and hits per innings pitch, 0.838. That's astounding.
It is.
Astounding. His fielding independent pitching is a 2.27. We're recording before his start. Please, God, don't make me be the jinx, but he's killing it right now. And then you look at what the two youngsters, Nastrini, he pitches five innings. He puts on one player per inning. Great. Cannon pitches five innings. His whip is under one at 0.80. You have some very effective pitchers there, at least in their first starts. Fetty, a fifth starter, going 1.328 on his whip, keeping guys off base. That's good enough for a fifth starter. That's solid for a fifth starter. There's staffs around Major League Baseball who aren't getting that kind of effectiveness from their fifth starter. And for whatever you think about Mike Clevinger, he's a guy who normally has a very respectable low whip, lower than a 1.30 when he's on and he's pitching well. This is a team, this is a rotation that'll keep guys off base. And then when you look at the guys who have been effective in the bullpen, Leisure's got a great whip and a great FIP. Steve Wilson's looking good. Michael Kopech, yeah, he's got one that looks like a starter's, but he's that guy who gets out of the inning after he puts two on because he just rears back and strikes guys out. Tanner Banks, who we love, 1.15 walks, hits per innings pitched. There's a lot of effective guys. At this point, if you're losing games, you better be losing them 3-2, 2-1, or Pedro's not doing things right. And he doesn't do a lot of things right. This is a staff. That's the one positive. Like, I don't think you're going to find a lot of hitting this year. Like, and, you know, maybe Sosa puts it together, right? Like, after he gets enough at-bats. But maybe not, right? Maybe all of a sudden, magically, one of these guys who are floundering like Benintendi or Vaughn, it clicks for him or something. But I don't think you're going to find hitting. You're finding pitching throughout the year. Drew Thorpe is lights out right now in AA. If you want to find something to be excited about, if you want to find something that you can say, okay, I hate this team, the owner sucks, the manager drives me nuts, I being a White Sox fan is painful. If you want to find something that's positive, take a look down in Birmingham and see a Drew Thorpe who through three games is 3-0 with a 0.50 earned run average. He has a whip of 0.78. And when you look at his time in AA last year in the Padres system and AA in Birmingham across eight starts, just eight starts, Ed, this kid that we got for Dylan Cease in just those eight starts or 48 innings, in 48 innings, he has only walked nine batters and he has struck out 62.
Yeah, he led the minors in strikeouts last year. This is a legitimate pitcher. Yeah, I know.
This kid's the truth. Like, he's a top-end rotation guy. He's a guy that you're like, I want to see him before the year's out. I definitely want him starting in my rotation in 2025, and I think it's a very realistic thing that could happen. And I think that I think I'm with James Fox. Don't even send him to Charlotte. I think he suggested it. Like, I don't know if I'd want to send him there. It's a launching pad. Why hurt his confidence? You know, maybe he has things he has to work out. He's not coming right now. He's only got 8 double-A starts. They're all spectacular, but he has 8 double-A starts between last year and this year. So it's going to be a while. But after the All-Star break, if this keeps up, I don't know, 1 or 2 starts in Charlotte. Don't get too excited about if somebody kind of gets a few runs on him because of the way that that ballpark plays, and then get him here. Maybe have him start on the road when he's with the Knights, so that you don't get the effect of that bandbox, and you get a good look at him, and then you go, okay, I think he's ready. Get him up here to the majors quick. But that's a guy that I'm excited about the rotation. I know it's crazy for a White Sox fan to be excited about anything, but I am excited about the rotation. It's the one positive this team has.
Oh yeah, and look, there's the nice thing is that in the minors there are the Drew Thorpes of the world, or Jairo Iriarte, who's the other guy that they got for Cease, who in 8 innings pitched, 2 starts, has yet to give up a run, and has 11 Ks over 6 walks. The 6 walks is a little, but he's doing well too. You've got options down there of guys that are seemingly ready to perform and come up here and do something. The biggest problem that they have is going to be, how are you going to line these guys up? And what is it that you want to do then, your lineup with the rest of this roster? Because what else you're looking at down there, it's grim.
Got a message through SoxInTheBasement.com. You can leave voicemails. You can type up a message and send it off to us. This is one of those ones that I really enjoy. Hey, Chris. Just wanted to give you some feedback. I want to thank you for advertising Window and Door Superstore of Oak Forest. My wife and I are very happy with Steve and the crew for their exceptional work in providing us new, beautiful custom doors and side lights to our home. I'd like to give them a shout out and an endorsement and encourage others to give them a call. A great service as advertised. The author of this then gave me their lineup going forward. I think we agree. I'm going to get into it. We agree. As for Window and Door Superstore of Oak Forest, for exterior windows, doors, patio doors, and storm doors, and no high-pressure sales, head over to their showroom. There's an owner there. There's an owner on site. They use their own installers, and they've been doing it for over 40 years in Oak Forest since 1985. Make them a stop this weekend if you're thinking about upgrading your home a half block east of 159th and Ridgeland at 6280 159th Street. See more at windowdooroakforest.com. If I were Chris Getz, Danny Mendick would be here. I would say there's no difference between Danny Mendick and Nicky Lopez. Nicky Lopez is about to turn 30 himself. I know he's great for the marketing department, Naperville Nicky. He's a local kid. He grew up a White Sox fan. But there's a guy down in AAA who's performed. Remember, right, the season before they moved on from him after the injury, before he got hurt, was performing, plays pretty good defense, puts the ball in the play. I always felt like he never got an opportunity. He's down there crushing it right now in Charlotte. Again, it is a bandbox, but you need a spark somewhere, and you don't have anything else really working for you. I mean, even the chosen one, Colson Montgomery, is hitting in the 220s right now in the bandbox of Charlotte.
Yeah,
that's good.
No.
He's going to be a while before he gets here. He's got some adjustments to make. They better not rush him. He's not ready yet. Put him back in the oven and keep him in there and reset the timer, because it's going to take longer than you expected, at least the way that he's gotten going to start the year. But that's the one guy. That's the one guy you could bring up and you could start. And you got Tommy Pham showing up. And I'm telling you, when Tommy Pham shows up, let's be honest, why not? Why you shouldn't be attached to anybody on this team at this point. Like I said, $40 million. I said this on a previous show. $40 million is about what your entire payroll is after you move on from Aloy and you on Moncada and you do the buyouts and you go in the next year. And you should be able to go out and buy 3 or 4 hitters and still be at $80 million and let your owner be a cheapskate and have a better rotation and fill in at the top of your order and bounce some of these guys down who are batting in the 4 and the 5 spot right now. Get them lower down in your lineup, and you could really change what this team is and how it produces and start this turnaround very quickly. And, until then, give something. You know, some of these guys got to know what it's like to win. You know, get Tommy Pham in there and put him out in the outfield. Let Fletcher continue to play in center field, because why not? Give him the at-bats. Benintendi, you're not going to move out of the outfield. And then guess what? Gavin Sheets has to go play first base. And Andrew Vaughn tough luck. You never did it. You know, you're just, in my mind, there's no difference between Mike Soroka having his last opportunity with me as Andrew Vaughn having his last opportunity with me, because he's nothing more than a replacement level player and he's gotten plenty of time up here and it's not working out. I mean, maybe you got to work with him down in AAA. Maybe you got to go into some sort of a platoon. I don't know what you do, but I would have Pham injected in the lineup and a Danny Mendick injected into the lineup, and I might let this Shoemake play more, and I'm definitely letting Sosa get as many at-bats as I can right now because I'm trying to find out what he is, and I'm not loyal to anybody else. I mean, the Maldonado thing, if you feel like you need to make him the personal catcher of every young pitcher, like if he's got to be Crochet, Nastrini, and Cannon's catcher for a while because you are concerned about their development, fine. You could justify that to me. I'm fine with it. The other two guys always get Corey Lee. And that's what I'd be doing right now with this, with the rotation, with the lineup, with the team.
Who on this team, other than the injured Luis Robert Jr., are you really worried about losing out? I'm Andrew Vaughn. I'm sorry. It's, you know, even Steve Stone is sitting there going out, like saying that this should have been his breakout year, and it's not, right? He's leading the team in strikeouts. He's got 19 Ks on the year.
They tried to make him Paul Konerko last year, Ed. They're walking around telling you what a leader he is, like they should put a C on his chest. Guess what, kid? You're never going to be Paulie Konerko. Ever. Just like Paul Konerko was never really going to be Frank Thomas. Even though I love Paul Konerko, I think he's great. There's a couple of pictures of him down here in this bar along with the big
yes,
hurt.
Yes, there are.
Okay? But guess what? Guess what, Andrew? You're never going to be Paul Konerko. And I don't care what a great locker room guy you are. They've been trying to christen this kid as the future and the leader. And what has he done?
Well, but that's the thing, you know, and that's the old, and this is honestly, there's a purge that needs to come here. Okay.
Oh, can we have an alarm that goes off? Can we get
sure. Yeah.
Suddenly White Sox personnel are scattering everywhere.
Yeah. We just won't tell them. That's all. Everybody else will know about it, but no, there's gotta be a big purge of this lineup, right? There's gotta be a big purge on this roster. And some of the guys that were the old core, if you want, I don't think there was ever a core under Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams under that, you know, whatever it was. But Andrew Vaughn was a guy that was rushed to the majors, never given a chance to properly develop, was crowned as the future, the once and future king of the White Sox. And it's too much. And now I don't know if he's pressing, but I don't know if his head will ever be in the game the right way. And he's hitting 167. He's got a 448 OPS. He's leading the team in strikeouts with 19. He looks a mess at the plate, and he's getting outplayed by Gavin Sheets. Okay, this is it. It may be time to cut bait on Andrew Vaughn, and he might be a great guy. Okay, it has nothing to do with whether or not he's a great guy. This is part of the problem. The White Sox don't need to be a group of guys that you want to, you know, go out and volunteer to clean a highway with, because I guess that's what you do with great guys. You got to have a bunch of guys who can hit and who can play. And if they're not hitting, if they're not playing their way onto this team, then they can play their way off. And I realize, like, Andrew Benintendi would be dead money. You're not gonna convince Jerry to let you get rid of him. But Paul DeJong, are you buying the 275 average? He got a little hot here.
Oh, he had a really good day during the doubleheader.
Yeah.
Like right now, who should be in the infield? Gavin Sheets should be playing first base. And then I want to see as much Danny Mendick and Lenin Sosa and Braden Shoemake that I can possibly get in my infield. Like that's where I'm at. And if DeJong is hot right now and you want to make the argument that he should be in there, okay, fine. Okay. But little Nicky, what is it with Nickies at second base annoying me because they can't hit? Right? Is that like what we do?
No.
Am I in a simulation where there's just always a Nicky? It was Nick Madrigal. We had Nicky two strikes. Now we got Nicky Lopez. Like, I don't want to see any more Nickies at second base.
Can Nick Nastrini play second base when
Please,
he's not pitching?
Please, no. Please, no. I'm going to change my youngest kid's first name from Nick because that's how annoyed I'm getting with the Nickies.
That's probably a good idea, actually. But yeah, I agree with you. Braden Shoemake should be playing second base every day. And Paul DeJong can play short if he's the hot one, you know, that's hitting. And he is hitting more. He's tied for the team lead in homers, so maybe there's something there. But Lenin Sosa playing, I know it is sad. Lenin Sosa playing third, Gavin Sheets playing first. These are the guys that are playing. These are the guys that are hitting. These are the guys that are getting something done, or that you want to see something and understand what they are. That's what this team should be about right now. Because frankly, when Tommy Pham comes up, if people are sitting there, why Tommy Pham? Well, why Kevin Pillar? Why Robbie Grossman? Like, why do you care about these guys?
Sox in the Basement listeners, here's the deal. When you combine State Farm home and auto insurance, you save an average of $889. State Farm agent John Harrell is ready to help you combine home and auto and save in Chicagoland. Give him a call today. 708-481-4500. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Average annual per household savings based on a 2019 national survey by State Farm of new policyholders who reported savings by switching to State Farm. The Sox nerd coming up here in just a few moments. Before we get to him, you mentioned Kevin Pillar. He and Robbie Grossman, you can dump anytime. But as for Pillar, he was on base in game two of the doubleheader midweek. Game one, we had a complaint on the call-in line.
We're not going to win many games this year. I understand that. We're not going to get many pitching performances like we got today. And at the end of the day, you don't pitch to Perez. It's really basic 101, knowing the other team, knowing that lineup, right? People say you don't put the go-ahead run on. Yes, you do in that situation when you got Perez at the plate, right? And it's just so disheartening to have these kids go out and bust their butts today like this and have some dumbass manager, you know, in the dugout not realizing the situation. It's really sad.
And they lose game one, which, you know.
Yes, they did.
They lose a lot of games. That's what they do.
That's what they do best.
Right, exactly. And remember, if you have a comment, you can write it at SoxInTheBasement.com. You can also leave your voice message there at SoxInTheBasement.com. But game two, they win 2-1. And even in a win, I found an example. I was yelling at the television. I found another example as to why Pedro needs to go. I'm sick of the thing of like, well, he's not the only problem, and what good would it do? There is a good it would do. You have a bunch of struggling kids, and all he keeps saying is, well, they're not all kids. Most of them are old, but there's a few of them, like a Dominic Fletcher, okay, or a Lenin Sosa, okay, maybe need a little bit of confidence. You know, you got to show them what it's like to win in the majors, or you're just going to ruin them forever, okay? And we're just going to have to bring in new guys because these guys will just be shell-shocked. And at the end of the season, like they went through something awful, and they'll never be right. That's the White Sox way. We take young talent and we don't handle it right, and then they just never turn into what they're supposed to be because of guys like Pedro. Because here we are in the bottom of the eighth inning, Sox have two on.
So basically, you're saying every young player turns out to be Andrew Vaughn,
pretty much. And okay. Pillar is in at second base. He's brought in as a pinch runner after Sheets gets on. Jimenez is at first. There's no outs. It's 2-1. You have a lead. And you haven't won enough games to use all the fingers on your right hand to count them. This is how bad things are, right? You need a win. You need one.
And for those who don't know, I'm missing a finger on my right hand, so that's even worse.
Yeah, we could still use your right hand as well.
Which is bad.
You need a win. You desperately need to find a way to win the game. You have a one-run lead. You have two on and no outs. And up comes the string of 250 hitting or worst players that don't hit home runs. And the first one to the plate is Dominic Fletcher. Now, here's a kid who clearly is pressing, has started to show a little bit of life. But you know what you need to do? You need to make him a part of some good results. And the one way you can assure that he's part of a good result is a productive bunt. I know that the young kids hate hearing that word. A productive bunt that takes the double play off and moves those runners 90 feet. And he comes off and he gets some high fives from his teammates because he laid down the bunt properly, even though he's out. He's got a little bit of speed. Maybe he gets lucky and the guy misplays the ball.
He might have gotten lucky and gotten on, right, too, because he is a faster guy.
But you're sack bunting there. You're not bunting to try to get on, but maybe you get lucky with it. But you're going to do something productive. You go and you do that. You take the double play off, and then you get two opportunities to try to get a runner in on a sack fly. Or you poke one through and you get two runners in and you ensure that you're going to win the game. Now, they did end up winning the game. The tying run made it onto the base paths for the Royals, but they did end up winning the game. Unfortunately, though, they screw up that inning because Pedro's in there picking his nose, okay, or trying to come up with something profound that he wants to say the next time a microphone's in his place, or maybe he's thinking about his next team meeting where he's going to motivate a bunch of people because those work so well. And he's not paying attention to what's going on. doesn't seem to understand what his team is yet. I don't think he ever will. So he lets Fletcher swing away. You get a soft fly out to the outfield. And guess what Lenin Sosa comes up and does? Hits into a double play. Two on, no out, trying to get an extra run to get a win. Hits into a double play. As the inning's unfolding before Fletcher flies out, I turned to the person next to me and said, watch this. They're not bunting. It's gonna either be a double play from this guy or it'll be a double play from the next guy after this guy makes an out. It's so predictable. He's a poor manager. He's bad in game. He doesn't seem to bring the right attitude for everybody that's there. He can talk all he wants to about accountability, but I don't see him issuing it. And he needs to go. Get your rotation right, then get a different guy in there calling the shots. I don't care if it's Grady Sizemore or any one of the other guys that you have sitting in that dugout. It shouldn't be him anymore.
No, and you know, to your point about that too, think about what that does for Lenin Sosa coming up after Dominic Fletcher. Okay, Fletcher gets a productive out, and then Sosa's got a real opportunity because the infield's either drawn in, so his ground ball that turned into a double play, let's say he hits that same ground ball, that's going to be a harder play for Witt. You know, maybe he hits it right at him, maybe he doesn't, but I do remember thinking as I watched him hit that ball going, you know, that could have gotten a run home.
That would have gotten a run home. That exact ground ball to Bobby Witt Jr. and it turns into a double play would have scored Pilar and given you the insurance run.
Yeah, and keep in mind, you know, we brought up Davey Garcia earlier, whose numbers look terrible, and this was one of the games where he's looked better. He gets a two-inning save out of this game, which, you know, again, you sit there and you go, this is a little questionable, you know, what you're doing here with, yeah, with your bullpen and the way you manage it.
One of your statistically worst guys in the bullpen, and you're using him in that way, but you don't think that you need to scratch out an extra run to give him some help.
Right, and give the guy some breathing room. And, you know, now Garcia does his job, which is great, okay? But you aren't giving him an opportunity to set him up to win. And what? Why would we call for Pedro's removal? What can that change, okay? If you're looking at it from the standpoint of Pedro Grifol is not causing Andrew Benintendi to hit under 200, or frankly, most of the team to hit under 200. No, he's not, okay? He's not causing them to have any miscues in the field. He is putting Gavin Sheets in a position where he's going to fail. He is not giving Dominic Fletcher opportunities to succeed. He's not giving Corey Lee opportunities. He's not giving Lenin Sosa an opportunity there to succeed. He's not giving young Davey Garcia an opportunity to succeed. He's making it harder on all these players. And I don't want to hear about some, you know, this builds character, or this is how they learn to win and pull themselves up by the bootstraps. Your job as a manager, especially with a team that is trying to develop young talent, and this is where Ricky Renteria was actually kind of talented with this. We saw it with the Cubs and the White Sox.
I miss Ricky Renteria.
Don't you right now?
I really do.
But Ricky was able to put guys in a position where they could get a little success and find themselves in a position. Now, he was not a great in-game manager by any stretch, but
better than this guy.
Those players believed in themselves, and they found some success a little bit at a time, and they learned how to play the game at the major league level, or at least how to adapt their game to the major league level, because that's largely what it is. It's not learning to play the major league game. It's taking the God-given talent that made Dominic Fletcher a prospect and got him all the way to the majors, and letting him adapt and find his way in the majors. You got to give him an opportunity to do that, though. And you're not doing it. Pedro's not doing it. He is treating this like a veteran squad of guys that are going to be able to hit their way out of it. And he's not giving these young guys a chance. That's why he's got to go. He's got to go because he has got to give the right guys the right opportunities. And he's got to figure out how to get to these veterans and get them off their butts and back to their baseball cards.
And it took him until the 19th of April to take a guy who's probably, I mean, maybe not statistically right now, but in terms of talent, as long as he's healthy, probably the best hitter in your lineup right now with Luis Robert Jr. down, and he put Eloy Jimenez in the two spot today.
Right.
He finally stopped playing the stupid game of I need a grindy guy who has some speed and moves some things along. He's just a hole that's going to get a ton of at-bats at the top of the order. He finally didn't do that. And it took him till the 19th of April. This guy is in over his head and can't figure it out. He was probably one hell of a bullpen catcher. It doesn't mean he's a manager. This is like one of these guys that got a manager's job because he hung around long enough. On the line, line with me right now, yet another week with the Sox nerd, Dave Marin, who puts all those interesting tidbits up on the scoreboard at the rate. I know a lot of you haven't seen that, though, because there's lots of video of open seats, plenty of good seats available at every single White Sox game. I don't know how many people get to see what you put up there, Dave, so that's why you're on Sox in the Basement, and the Sox nerd is brought to you by the Village of Lamont. Want to experience a downtown with real history, great eats and drinks, and green spaces filled with adventure? Visit the Village of Lamont. Shop, dine, drink, explore, and see everything they have going on this weekend and beyond at LamontDowntown.com. Nerd, what do you have for us that most people aren't seeing at the ballpark?
Chris, let me give you some insight into how the sausage is made in my job as graphics coordinator in the White Sox scoreboard department. Sox pitcher Nick Nastrini's big league debut was Monday, which was Jackie Robinson Day, when MLB celebrates the legacy of its premier pioneer. Like Jackie, Nastrini attended UCLA, which gave me a solid leadoff nugget to post as he was taking his warm-up tosses. How else, I thought, could I tie Nastrini and Robinson on Jackie's day? I dug into the UCLA website and discovered that Nastrini wore number 30 for the Bruins. Wouldn't it be wild if Jackie also wore 30 or the 43 Nastrini would don for the Sox after Jackie Robinson Day, where everyone was wearing 42? I dove headfirst into the UCLA baseball media guide, and I could not find Jackie's baseball number at the school. He wore 18 for basketball and 28 for football, but a baseball number was nowhere to be found. There were pictures of Jackie playing baseball, but none that showed his jersey, and the UCLA uniform number history only went back to 1975. I was committed to this, and it was still well before first pitch, so I thought I'd go right to the source, and I emailed the UCLA Sports Information Department. Baseball contact Andrew Wagner responded almost immediately and wrote, quote, "This is still a great mystery here at UCLA. We and the Dodgers have unsuccessfully been trying to figure out which number he wore for baseball for years. Apologies, I can't be more helpful." So no uniform nugget, but still plenty of good Nastrini stuff, including his outing where he retired the first 11 batters he faced. As the righty was plowing through the Royals lineup, I was furiously searching for a Sox pitcher making an MLB debut as a starter who had this kind of success. I knew I was onto something rare when I got all the way back to 1910 before I hit a research roadblock. At this point, I can say with complete confidence that Nastrini's 11 consecutive batters retired are the most by a Sox starter to begin a career since 1911. And I'm almost certain it is a Sox record. I just have to confirm somehow that Bill Chief Chunu did not retire the first 12 he faced in the 1910 Sox finale. Welcome to my rabbit hole. Before I get to my zinger, I remind you pearls like these can be found on my blog, which can be accessed at SoxInTheBasement.com. Speaking of SoxInTheBasement.com, Mark Jacoby contacted me through the Sox in the Basement website with a question about Sox Sunday hitters. I have been known to post a spectacular day of the week stat, usually on Sunday, so I like this query. The Sox best hitter on Sunday this season is Dominic Fletcher. He's played in all three Sunday games and is hitting .400, which boosted his career average on the day to .333, including his time with Arizona. You know who else is good on Sundays? Andrew Benintendi. Yup, he's hit .308 with two RBIs this season on the day after posting a .301 average last season. Last year, Luis Robert Jr. slashed .338, .405, and .770 with seven homers on Sunday, but that was his career best. None of those compare, however, to Charlie Maxwell, who played for the Sox from 1964 to 1967. His nickname was the Sunday Slugger for his prowess on the day throughout his career. Fittingly, his best day with the Sox was on July 8, 1962, which was a Sunday. In a doubleheader sweep at Cleveland, Maxwell was 6-for-8 with a home run, a triple, and four RBIs. That's it, Chris. More than you wanted to know about Nick Nastrini, Jackie Robinson, number 42, the Chief, and my rabbit hole.
Sox in the Basement. Sox in the Basement. Sox in the Basement.
Sox in the Basement. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found, and always on SoxInTheBasement.com.